had so much Bolton in my life.
This just into the Survivor SA newsroom.
I don't know how to do this.
T.
N.
O.
E N O. Woo!
And now your host with the most. It's Claudio Barrero.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the first. What is it? First episode of TNO for the season. We are currently covering season 9. This is the return of the Outcast. And of course, I've got a new co-host here. But before I get into my co-host, Mr. Sean Gilbride, and that's the big reveal, Sean. You can just wave quickly before you say anything. Just wave. Just wave. Get the people what they want.
Sorry. The green screen. Messing it up. I am waving.
So that's Sean Gilbride. But before we get into it, this is obviously TNO, your Thursday Night Outcast on a Friday. That's the little caveat. My name is Claudio, and today we're going to be doing the normal thing that we normally do. Golden Spear, Wooden Spoon, Storms are Brewing. And of course, we've got a new segment, so stay tuned for that. And don't be afraid to drop your comments in and get involved in the conversation, because we are a big tribe and we like getting bigger. So, Sean, before we get into anything, we always love starting the show with an icebreaker, and because technically you're making your debut, podcasting debut, by the way, so please don't be too harsh on Sean, but also be very critical, if you know what I mean. Anyway, all right, icebreaker, Shawnee, so that people know what you're about. So would you rather get your butt waxed or go swimming in Antarctica?
Yeah, I reckon swimming in Antarctica. Quite an easy one. I don't do too badly in cold water, so I think that's easy.
Oh.
From what I've heard, listening to so much Joe Rogan, that it's amazing for you. So there we go, easy one.
So there's two moments of insights. There's one, he listens to Joe Rogan, and two, he clearly isn't the hairiest of men, and he'd rather go swimming in cold water. Right, Sean. Also, just some insight. Why Sean is the co-host is because last year, while we were running, both our girlfriends ran from Joburg to Cape Town for a charity called Mad to Run, which is a very awesome charity, but not the point of the show tonight. But while they were training at 5 in the morning, we were the boyfriends that were training with them, and we were chatting about Survivor, getting ready for the show. So it was just natural. It was a natural transition to get Sean on the show here. And yeah, any words you want to say, Sean, to the people watching?
No, I think you summed it up there pretty well there. I think we had plenty discussions while running about the season 8 mainly of Survivor. I was maybe a little shocked you asked me. This is not what I usually do, but happy to be here. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm looking forward to recapping the early season 9.
We've got some regulars in the comments here. We've got Dylan Furry, we've got Hilchard, we've got a new face. Think it's Alex. He's saying hello, everyone. And of course, Warren's here. We know Warren really well, in case you don't know who he is. He is the man responsible for some of our animations and the beautiful things that you're going to be seeing today. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, Sean, the moment has arrived. The season. 4 episodes a week. It is the first time ever they're doing it from a South Africa perspective. We've got returning castaways, people that know how to play the game. Overall, what's been your first impression?
It's a different format, having one every night. You cram in a lot of Survivor during the week. It's a lot to unpack in these episodes. But yeah, it's been I suppose like they all do, it's been a bit of a slow start, I think. I don't know.
Slow start. Which part was slow? Was it the first episode that was slow?
Maybe I was thinking more of the first episode.
They definitely pulled off in second gear. I know what you're saying there. They pulled off in second with the first episode.
Yeah, it did seem like. And I was just a bit shocked. I mean, I don't know. Maybe just because I'd finished watching that Winners at War season. But they started exactly the same. They started on a beach. They doubled the money. And then they played exactly the same game. So I was like, I actually went back to season 40 just to make sure I wasn't going crazy. But they started the exact same way. So I was like, it didn't start off with blowing my socks over there.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I mean, there were some interesting twists and themes. And I think, well, let's chat about that. The return of the Outcasts, okay, firstly being the theme. What do you think about that? Instead of it being a newbie, a newbie season for Survivor. They've decided now, they've gotten to the point where they've recruited old castaways and they've said, here, here's a platform to play this game again. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's obviously interesting. It adds a different dynamic, knowing so much about the castaways before they sort of arrive. I think it's a different dynamic to the game. Where did they stop at season four? Why did they not get anyone like from like season one, two? Was a specific reason?
Oh, Sean. We don't go that way back. There's pre-Afrikaans and then there's post-Afrikaans. And I think the recruitment, you know, they just thought with, let's keep with the guys that were more recent in people's memories and let's give them a go. But that's an interesting sort of dynamic. You're right. Like, why didn't they bring back someone from the first season? You know, it would have been cool to see the stripper that won. I forgot her name now, but it would have been cool to, I'm sure he'll go, Gigi, hey, you knew her very well, Sean. That came flying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, that would be interesting to have her back. Yeah. Right, but anyway, but with regards to, so you're saying the first episode was slow. You're saying the theme's quite an interesting one, right? Like you said, interesting dynamic now. There's a whole bunch of players coming into the game. I think what's quite interesting from my side is that these players do know how to play the game. So it does help for the South African audience, which I know we're in the ninth season, but it's not 40-something seasons like the US. So we do need to somewhat get new members, new audience, new crowd and grow that a little bit and also show them how the game can be played. So when you've got players that come in with a sort of level of expertise, people start realizing, okay, it's less of like a real life situation, even though we're going to comment on that, and more of a gaming situation. So I think that is an interesting point. And it's a nice sort of evolution for South Africa to go. We've gotten to the point where we can get to a stage where we have returnees come back because we want to grow and we want to keep going because that's the sort of foundation that the US have always done. So that's a quite interesting sort of aspect. But what about the castaways that were chosen so far for this season, Sean?
Yeah, it's an interesting take. I mean, it was quite nice, maybe different to split it like pre-merge, post-merge, like immediately, not have like a tribe, you know, picking or whatever. So they were already pre-selected to the pre-merge, post-merge, which made it quite nice. But yeah, I think, some of the guys I didn't know, I'm obviously a fan of Survivor. Otherwise I wouldn't be doing this, but, so some of the guys go a bit back. For me, all my memory is not that great. But yeah, overall, I think everyone seems to be going well. There's already been some drama in the later episodes, so they obviously picked it pretty well. Not sure how they pick who gets to return, but I'm assuming there's an element
Sean,
of who's going to create
that's
drama.
That's an interesting thing. It's because you got Hilhard saying, Sean, keen to hear who on the cast you really think needs the redemption story this season. And that's the interesting thing, is the arc of the season. Are these players, barring probably the one by your shoulder there, is that they came in and they needed redemption. And there's a lot of scars that they've all come in with, like your Seamus, like a couple of the others. I can't even think of the name right now. But Seamus is the clear and evident one. It opens up with him looking like a Buddhist monk who's been away for 10 years trying to find his inner peace because of the fact that Survivor's left the scar on his heart. So it's an interesting case where they are going to try and redeem themselves, and it's influencing their gameplay. But with regards to you, in terms of which player do you think needed it the most or needs it the most?
Look, I mean, I didn't actually know too much about Seamus before this season. Obviously researched a bit and I found out he was the first boot, which he mentioned as well. But I was pretty shocked that affected him. Like, I mean, you assume Survivors is the game, but it obviously meant a hell of a lot more to him. Like his little speech to Dino about him looking at the mirror and knowing that he's the oak that cost his game, or his dream essentially, to play Survivor. So I think, I mean, he's in my mind forefront to have the big redemption. In the same breath, I mean, having mentioned Dino, I know, speaking to you and stuff like that, he was also quite a student of the game, and I don't think his season really showed that in terms of him being also voted out quite quickly. So I think for me, those two kind of stick out in terms of redemption. I would obviously always go with the sort of pre-merge tribe, because they got more to prove than the post-merge. I know we have no returnee winners, but I mean, obviously those guys have more to prove.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point, and it's the obvious one. It's kind of the sort of situation that we're seeing how it's unfolding. It's those players that have more to prove, that it looks like there's a lot more for them to lose. So they're making more cautious decisions as opposed to the other ones that are playing a sort of pre-merge game in a situation where they haven't even reached the merge yet. And it's sort of the confidence of the one tribe versus the other one that are slowly trying to lay out the pieces and build their puzzle together. But Jeremy, curious as to what you've put there in the comments saying there are a couple of flat players in the post-merge tribe. Can you please, I mean, if you're comfortable, naming and shaming so we can see what your real thoughts are there as opposed to just throwing it out there. We've also got Richard coming in saying, definitely agree with Sean. Seamus, there we go. And then again, Hilchot saying, Richard, welcome to the gang, Richard. So, you know, we love our community. We love the people dropping in, yeah? So thank you for joining us. But Sean, last one. With regards to overall the challenges when we're looking at it, I mean, standard sort of survivor challenges. But if you've got to look at the crafting and everything in terms of what you've experienced so far, in terms of the overall package of what Survivor, LaRue and the gang have done, what's been your impression there?
No, it's been good. I mean, obviously we've seen like I mentioned, the first game was something we've seen before, but still a good first challenge. Other than that, they kind of, at the moment, they've been pretty decent. I was hell of a shocked at the setting of Eastern Cape. I know you said they shot it in Eastern Cape, but yes, when they were walking through that field, it looked amazing.
Is that going to be one of your weekend trips there? Are you planning if anyone else in the comments is going to go? We might as well make a giant sort of Survivor gang trip there where we just get everyone going and exploring the Eastern Cape. I think that's the purpose of it. Also, a nice sort of touch that they do shoot this locally. I know for the castaways, it's not such a big deal right now, but if for any newbies, and a question there pointed to you, Hilchot, and anyone else that wants to enter again, would you be comfortable playing the game locally or would you prefer going overseas? Even though we know the sort of impact it has on our community locally. So just drop that in the comments there. Before we move on, one last thing with regards to what we have to discuss and who we need to look at. So far, Sean, who's been most impressive for you?
Most impressive? I would say, I mean, even considering his story, I've been quite impressed with Seamus. He seems to be quite level-headed, very rational, in the way he's played. The only thing that maybe sort of swayed my vote, well, not vote, but my thinking in this last episode was that Felix and Phil, they kind of picked up that he's actually sort of emerging at a bit of a stronger player in terms of his social play, that a lot of people seem to like him and stuff like that. But yeah, I think he's had a really sort of, like I said, I can't really remember his season, but it sounded like he played too hard too quickly, and I don't think he's making that same mistake this season. So I think for me, he kind of stands out a bit.
Definitely. And I think from my side, seeing as you've already covered Yuen Tao, I'm going to cover the Masu tribe. I think one of the obvious names that everyone in the comments will agree is Marion. Marion is doing the business there, ladies and gentlemen. But we're going to get touch into our next segment and the section we're going to move into, and we'll unpack it a little bit further. But just before we do that, I just want to see what we've got in the comments. Alex saying, I think the challenges will be more physical this season. I mean, Sean, when you were looking at the first challenge where they just had to play for Flint, it was a bit of an old challenge that they've had previously where they got to tackle each other, run and sprint and get that sort of boy that was hanging there. But jeepers, I mean, to Alex's point, physical? What do you think?
Yeah, no, look, I'm not too sure about Steffi's ACL. I've seen people tear the ACL before, and I don't think they can run like that. So that seemed like she was trying to get some sympathy or something. I'm not sure what she was doing, but it must be an old injury, because I mean, she sprinted and she didn't look like she had any sort of injury in that one. But yeah, look, it was a good challenge there. And Chappies and Dante, yes, as they owned it as well. So
Chappies put in a hell of a tackle there. He smashed Seamus. So, I mean, it wasn't the best start for Seamus from the challenge perspective. But also, did you not think it was too physical? Based on Alex, on what are you saying here? I mean, it opened up with that sort of challenge. But just for Flint, such a sort of physical challenge. I think if you were a castaway, they weren't, like, chose not to participate or managed to get out of participating, rather. I think that was a smart move, putting all that energy off day one just for Flint. And I know if just for Flint, it's fire, it's warmth, it's all the rest of it. But jeepers, why not throw someone else under the bus? Like, Sean, if you and I were playing, I'd make you compete.
Yeah, no problem. I'm fit enough, happy to do that. No, I'm just kidding. But, no, I'm kidding. But, I mean, yeah, you could see. I can't remember the exact four, but I know the group that Marion was in. Yes, those chicks looked buggered after that little thing. They were just, I think, resting. They were all just using that boy as a proper flotation device and just hanging on there.
Jeez, yeah, no, that's true though. We got Richard saying they've adapted some of the challenges from Australian Survivor, and that they have. But before we move on, something that they did manage to integrate into this season, and that's something that came from New Zealand Survivor, funny enough, and no doubt it's come from Shannon Gus, with regards to the recommendation, as she is the consultant on the show, so shout out to her. But the whole sort of outpost negotiation idol sort of swap there. How did you think that dynamic played out, Sean?
Yeah, it was an interesting one I've seen before. I was kind of confused a bit at why, you know, what the sort of thinking behind voting for the other tribe, knowing that you would give them immunity, and then, you know, the Yontar tribe both, well, they voted for someone in their own tribe, and then the Masu tribe voted for someone in the Yontar tribe as well. It's an interesting one. I'm not really sure. I was trying to sort of put myself in that position as to what would be the best move there. Like, do you vote for someone in your own tribe and then sort of clearly from day one, like, outline who you want to work with? Or do you vote for someone in the other tribe knowing that you're giving them immunity and maybe sort of save their weakest player, so to keep their tribe weak? And obviously the Sheamus and them went with their own tribe. They ended up winning, so it was probably a good call, but I mean, it's difficult to tell before the challenge.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. I suppose, like, when you're looking at what Steffi and Shane did, in hindsight, it makes more sense because you're not revealing too much about your own tribe, except in this scenario, it's backfired because Tevin's managed to go to their tribal council, drop a bomb, and get a lot of insights. And I think that's the interesting thing about this twist this season, or within the theme, rather, is that we've got game players, people that have played the game before, and now you're throwing this extra element where they've got to think about it. And the irony about it is that the guy, Tejan, who hasn't played, he's one of the older players out there, he is the one reminding everyone, hey, listen, we've got an outsider listening in on what's going on here exactly. So that was an interesting twist, but I did like that sort of element to it. I'm curious to see how this plays out, and I want to see how the players are able to adapt. But Hilgard asking another very good question. You're saying, you'd like to hear your thoughts on these combined reward immunity challenges. Would you prefer it separately? What do you think?
I was actually trying to remember when watching it, how they previously did it. Had they always had separate sort of immunity and reward, or was that always post-merge or even pre-merge? Did they do it separately?
No, they're normally separated, but I think it's also largely due to the fact where if you've got a longer episode, you've got more time, you can do it. But personally speaking, what I'm experiencing is I like it because it gets to the more exciting stuff, as opposed to just competing for a reward. You go, well, again, to my point with them exerting so much energy in the first challenge, I go, well, did that make sense really? But now you're going and get a 2-for-1. So whatever you're going to maximize out of the players, you're going jeepers. If you really perform here, it's not just a reward, it's your life and food. So there's more incentive to get more out of the players, especially. That's why we've seen Dante in the last episode screaming, trying to hold on to that thing as long as he can, you know. So it does create that, and it ramps up the drama, my thought. I don't know. What do you think there, Sean?
Yeah, I was trying to think. I was also thinking, like, in the previous seasons, and like, again, like, I've never played Survivor, so I'm sure hunger is a thing, but they seem to give them a hell of a lot of food. Like, I remember watching seasons, like, back in the day when...
You're one of those guys, Sean.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause I remember watching those seasons where, like, the one oak was a complete dick, but they were like, listen, we can't vote him out. He's the only oak who knows how to spearfish. And he was like catching all the fish, where that element seems to have completely been removed from the game. And I don't know if that's maybe because they give them more reward, or maybe they just, like in the Eastern Cape where there's lots of coconuts and pineapples or something like that. But it was always an element of the game, seemingly. And I remember that, like, whoever provided for their tribe could actually, buy their way, like, a few more votes just because the people couldn't really survive without them. So in terms of combining it, maybe it is better. Maybe there's less reward, less food, and we can see how these are exact. What do you think? Do you think it's, do you think they were given more food or not? I don't know.
No, I wouldn't say they've been given more food. I think, I mean, just judging by the whole sort of food crisis scenario, sharing scenario there at Yantar with regards to, you know, Pinty and Tanya, I don't know if that's the ideal situation. So food is always going to be an issue. And also, when you look at how you consume on a daily basis versus what they are eating, there's definitely an impact. And when we see how much weight they lose further down the line, I think it's clearly evident. But we've got Christy saying she likes the separation. Dylan also saying they like to separate it because they love watching the challenges. And also think challenges are a big part of the game. Richard's saying if they have two challenges, they do get drained more. And that's an interesting sort of perspective. When we're looking at how psychological this game is and we're looking at strategy, the more tired these players are, the harder it is for them to make the right decisions. And we know, just judging by Chappies and sort of what happened to him in the first ep, or this being the first boot, it's a sort of decisions ultimately that can cost you. And the further they go, the more tired they get, the hungrier they get, the more they get on each other's nerves. These things do play a big, big part. We've got, look at this. We've got Tanya saying, what? No. Only season 8 during COVID, they got food. You see? Tanya's saying they got no food, Sean. So what are you saying here? We know these things. She's saying they had very little. They had very little food.
Yeah, but Tanya, that's because Panty was eating all her food. So, I mean,
yeah, that's also
they had food. It was just the wrong person eating it. Maybe Tanya didn't stick up her hand to get more food. I don't know.
No, I think Tanya's fought for that one. I think we saw how that played out. Agreed, Sean. Jeremy's saying, I felt the same way in the last season especially. All right, but now it's that time. We're going to talk about the Golden Spear. For those of you who don't know about the Golden Spear, it is sort of the player that has made the best move normally in the episode. But in this case, we're looking at the recap of the week. So we're going to discuss a couple of players, and we can't really pinpoint exactly, but we're going to discuss the players that made good moves. And before we do that, we've got something special, and here it is. Hey, what did you think about that, ladies and gentlemen? That is our Golden Spear officially. So whoever wins that is going to get the Golden Spear. Somehow we're going to send it to you. But I suppose we can make – maybe, Sean, you in the NFT game. Maybe we can create an NFT and that's how they get one.
No,
but
no,
anyway,
no.
Sean.
Don't listen to me in NFTs, Zach. That's a good way to lose money quickly. I laughed at Dante and he's in this last episode saying he gave all his Bitcoin – he put all his Bitcoin on that. And I thought, geez, that must be worth nothing at the moment. So who cares?
Right, Sean, off the bat, players that made the best moves for you, who are they and why? Let's hear it.
So like I mentioned before, I think Seamus has had a good start. I felt again he was quite level-headed. Even when Tanya approached him with the pinty issue, he was like, listen, we trying to win prizes, trying to win the challenges. We've got good tribe unity. I'm not going to throw that all away for one bowl of rice, which I thought was quite rational. And he seems to be making quite good relationships with the people. I mean, obviously, Pinty felt comfortable in this last episode to ask him to play the immunity idol. So he's obviously making good relationships. So I think off the bat, I'd say him. The other guy that maybe stood out for me a bit, and also maybe that's just the way I think, because I keep going with the same sort of attributes where he was quite calm was Tevin. I think Tevin, in terms of him playing the idol for Palesa, knowing that could be like a future relationship if he made it that far. And then also the way he mediated between Tanya and Pinty, I thought was very good. I mean, he didn't lose his head. He spoke quite calmly. He tried to resolve the issue. He didn't really have a vote either way. He never chose sides. He said, listen, if Tanya sways everyone to vote for Pinty, I'll do that. Otherwise, Tanya's going home herself. So I think those two, probably for me, I mean, it's obviously very difficult to tell with four episodes down, you know, who really made big moves. Didn't really seem like I could pick out too many people. Who did you think? I don't know. I'd like to hear what you think.
I mean, I touched on it already, but I'm going to just drive the message home. Is Marion, she's come out guns blazing. I think initially they've all come in with prehistory. And this also what makes the game a little bit more exciting is they've got these connections. They've got matching tattoos. They've got past relationships and they've got et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you've got Marion coming in here saying almost reminiscent to my opinion of a Sandra Twine going anyone but me. But in doing so, playing that fine line of having multiple relationships. And in this case, she's kept Shane just close enough, but on the outskirts in order to get closer to other people. Mm-hmm. She was willing to sort of sacrifice him. And now she's got a strong two in terms of Steffi and Meryl. We can comment on Meryl. She's a social butterfly and she's always going to be good at this sort of scenario. It's just up until the point of whether or not they identify her as a threat. But yeah, Marion for me, I mean, what? She's got an idol. She's
really
found the idol. Yeah, she's found an idol. Nah. Come on, wake up.
No,
man.
But
she's
I mean,
found
yeah,
that idol.
It was first vote. And she was willing to throw her closest ally under the bus. She was like, I'll vote Shane.
But Sean,
hell, would you go by myself?
But this is why I'm happy about it. It's because this is a season of returnees. So it's a second chance at it. And I don't think she would have done that in the first season. And there's an element of growth there in that sort of scenario. And this is what also makes this game so interesting is that they've all come back here. They know what the game is about to a certain extent. But some of them, it's not some of them. It is a tough thing to still not be human and can't put that to bed and go, this is a game versus what I'm feeling. And it, again, we're only seeing an edit that is however long, with 40 minutes long, versus them experiencing it day in, day out. But to be able to manage your emotions from that perspective, I think there needs to be some sort of credit given.
Yeah, a little bit. I just thought, like, as his first vote, like, you heard him and agreed that it might have been edited weirdly, but you heard him going, like, I've got a guaranteed vote with Marion, and we got such a strong alliance. Next thing, he goes to tribal council and he's completely out of the loop, like, comes back and his name's written down, him and Chappies, and by and obviously by Marion. I can't remember if she voted Shane or Chappies, but either way, you know, he was completely blindsided. So he, if it was me, I would have lost all faith in that alliance that he thought he was so secure with Marion. Then again, in terms of her finding that diplomatic immunity, she ran around and just told everyone about it. I mean, is that always the great play to reveal everything as soon as you find it?
To be fair, I'm not one of, and you know, I'd love to see what the comments are on this as well. Seeing Survivor and seeing the idol, I think the idol is a lot more trouble than what it's worth, in my opinion. And we know that the key currency they talk about it every season is information. And in this case, she secured something somewhat powerful. If she holds on to that and people find out about it, then it's kind of a sneaky move. And she's like, it's all about herself. But by roping people and including them, it's that information that makes them feel valued and then makes them want to work with her. So I think that is an interesting sort of aspect as to going, okay, cool, that's what I'm going to do, especially if I find it. The other thing is the other situation where you can sort of just throw it out in the open like Tevin did. And I actually, going back to the Tevin point, he's a very, very good shot because, again, talking about players that have come back and learned somewhat, came in very confident in the first time he played. He came in very, you could say somewhat, he came in playing like a pre-merger, like the pre-mergers are currently playing, very confident in terms of the decision they're making. And he somewhat learned about that, like the whole tribe has, being a bit more quiet. But we're going to touch on why that actually plays into the situation that we saw last night with Tanya and Pinty. And to a certain extent, one that makes for uncomfortable viewing, largely because you resonate so much with what's going on. You are going to pick a side, even though we weren't necessarily there. But it's because of that gameplay where they're all so cautious. They're just going to let these people play out and let them paint targets on their back. But going back to the Tevin thing, he is smart. He gets told something. They all say he's found this idol. Teresa tells a lie, and how he buries the lie immediately is he just puts it out in the open. He confronts everyone and he says, hey, that's not you. Let's go looking for it to the benefit of Seamus. So Seamus does benefit, but ultimately you could say he wastes the idol. You could say that. You could. But I mean, you know, he's played a card.
Why? I mean, that was the last, wasn't that the last tribal council he could use it? So I mean,
it was the third one. Okay, he hasn't wasted it. I suppose he's done the right thing in that perspective. No, he hasn't wasted it. But the point is, again, everyone knows he's got the idol. What good did it? Like, had he found it and got caught, all of a sudden becomes a target.
Yeah, that's always a weird thing. And I think he acknowledged it himself, saying those group idols or those ones that you find when everyone's looking are pretty useless. Well, they're not useless because he obviously saved himself, but I mean, it's definitely not as powerful as it was if you find it by yourself and no one knows about it because everyone goes, okay, well, we know Seamus has the idol, so there's no point in playing it. Unless the only way he could have maybe used it is to use it for someone else, but that didn't really seem like he had anyone he needed to save, so.
I mean, we got, you know, I don't know what you think about this. Christy's saying Teresa, she said she's calculated, knows how to play the game. I also think, like, again, if we're looking at growth, and I know this is recap of the entire week, so we could arguably say that the golden spear for growth for the first week that we've seen, Teresa has shown some growth because what she struggled with last season was integrating herself socially. She seemed to have done this far better. I do think she makes a bit of a blunder, and we're going to touch on that. And she's probably, spoiler alert, she's going to be my wooden spoon candidate. So thank you for throwing the name out there, Christy. We got Richard saying, Comhelo saying, Dante has dictated the direction of all the tribe boots growth as well compared to last season. I think that's also an interesting point because what did we find out yesterday, Sean? Crucial bit of information that they did not show. Why don't you tell the people what we found out there?
In speaking to Chappies yesterday, we found out that he was actually digging for the idol with Chappies. I don't know if that was what you were alluding to, but yeah, that is exactly what I'm alluding to, Sean. I'm glad you're on the same page. Yeah. So yeah, I was quite shocked by that when Chappies said that because, I mean, he made it, like, he put a big target on Chappies' back by saying, like, listen, we can't fucking stay up all night and watch us, dig for idols or, I don't know, make his own Chappie's diner somewhere. So like we need to vote him out. Meanwhile, he's there digging with Chappie's to try to find the Isla, which I was quite shocked with, I must admit.
Yeah. So, I mean, credit to that. So I see what you're saying, Richard. But for me, I think it's too much too soon. I think he's overcorrecting it too quickly. You know, there's that graph, any growth sort of graph. You gradually want to do it, and then all of a sudden you start peaking at the right time. I think he's doing it, but he's climbing too quick, in my opinion. And I think people are going to get annoyed by it or identify that the fact. I mean, we've already seen what's to come. People are saying he's thinking he's the godfather because he's trying to overcorrect the game he played previously. So I think there's also that sort of element that can creep into their games. Kerry's saying, at least he didn't play the idol for Pinty, at least. I mean, Seamus, well played from that perspective. We know how the viewers feel about that scenario. We're going to talk about that before we move on. Dylan's saying, Golden Spear for me goes to Seamus, changed his game completely from what we saw in the Philippines. And I do want to say that it does look like the man's going away for 10 years. He's gone to some mountain in the Himalayas and he's hung out with some Buddhists and he's come back very zen. So, and calculate at the same time. And I think it's like testament to him and the control he has. My personal opinion, the only reason he stays over Tanya is the, oh, sorry, Pinty stays over Tanya is because of Seamus.
You think so? Why?
I think he had more control in that sort of scenario. He's got the close relationship with Tevin. I know Tevin said he would be swayed by that, but I think that was just him just saying it's a confessional for the sake of saying it. I think that decision was predetermined. Because, I mean, if we're looking at the argument that Tanya laid out, well, those are not valid points. I mean, as a logical, reasonable person sitting there experiencing everything, you could see the cast were keeping quiet, letting Pinty say the situation was you had someone that was extremely self-aware, Tanya, and then another one that wasn't self-aware going, hey, I don't upset anyone. You know, that's the situation. And then everyone going, not speaking up again, and to the point that Kanye had the courage to challenge the notion. But again, because everyone doesn't want to get voted out, they let the situation unfold and they let them become targets themselves.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on that, but I mean, I suppose I'll touch on that on the Golden Spear, but I just think that Pinty seems completely like no self-awareness in terms of what she's doing. Like it seems like that everyone had shared a similar sentiment to Tanya, which seemed so crazy to me that she ended up getting voted out because it should have been an easy vote. Should have been, she's causing cuck, she's out. But somehow the way Tanya handled it got her voted out. So I think that more speaks to Tanya than Pinty in my opinion, in terms of who handled that better. That it was definitely the two of them. Pinty, I thought, should have been the easy vote out, but yeah, I don't know. Tanya didn't do too well.
This is what I can argue is that I think she actually did a good job, too good of a job. And they were like, you know what? At least we know. Like, Pinty isn't controllable. She's not, because it's going to be impulsive, whatever the reaction is. However, whatever the guarantee is, you got her for X amount of votes. Whereas with the Tanya, I think she was too strategically out there in terms of going, this is someone that can play the game. And even though she's not my number one or two, she's definitely lower down the pecking order. If I save her today, what will she do to me tomorrow? Because she can think of something that she can do to me. And I think that was the downfall there, personally speaking.
Sure, I don't know. I don't know if I agree. I don't know. I think she put herself in the firing line. Firstly, in terms of her taking blame for Teresa lying about Tevin, I don't know what her thinking was in terms of that. Like, I know she said she didn't want to throw Teresa under the bus, but I mean, at what cost, you know?
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that next. I suppose let's just wrap up the Golden Spear.
Yeah.
Sean, are we going to come to a consensus here? I'm saying Marion. You're saying, you mentioned Tevin.
Yes,
you said Seamus.
There's no way.
I mean, there's some good ones. No, is there anyone else we're forgetting? Maybe Felix. Felix caught a fish. I mean, he celebrated that fish.
Did he call it? No, wasn't it Phil?
No, it was Felix. Oh, no, it was Phil. Sorry, it was Phil. My bad.
It was Phil, yeah.
It was Phil. Yeah, Phil caught the fish. So yeah, but who are you going to go with? Final one there.
Definitely Tevin.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're going Tevin?
Definitely. I don't think Marion, I don't think she played too well.
Hang on. Okay. Let me also replay everything that you said. Add it to the fact he gives a thing to Palesa. There's some sort of alliance there. What is quite interesting was he did mention he doesn't like someone playing with someone emotional because that's very unpredictable, but it's going to be interesting to see if Tony makes it to a swap or makes it further down the line, because in that situation, then surely he doesn't work with the Tony, just based on that comment alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't think so. I mean, it was quite funny hearing PK called Tony out in the first episode, being the closest person. But yeah, she seems very emotional. So if that's not what he wants to play with, I can't imagine it working with her. Although it depends, I suppose, on the numbers when they merge.
Well, Tanya's saying she should have kept quiet, but I suppose, Sean, you're probably going to talk about the wooden spoon then, saying life versus the game. And that's also the thing. Sean, Sean's a robot. If Sean had to go play Survivor, I think you'd handle these situations really well, because he calls a spade. In my case, I'm watching Tanya, and I'm not going to lie, I had tears when she's talking about the courage sort of situation when she calls people out, and it gets so frustrated in that scenario. I was frustrated for her watching it. And again, look, I am a Tanya fan. I was Team Tanya coming into this, and so I was really disappointed her getting voted out 100%. There's no denying that. So, Sean, you're always going to find a rebuttal on my side when it comes to anything regarding Tanya. But we got Richard saying, Liverpool fan too. Oh, yes, that. There we go. You never walk alone, Richard. Alex saying, be Liverpool. Guys, this isn't, if you want to talk about football, go to Goal Lounge TV, subscribe to that. This is Survivor today, okay? All right. Yeah. Tanya, one last thing before we move over and we give our final sort of verdict on who gets the golden spear. Tanya's saying, in life, it's good to stand up. In the game, you can't. Now, what kind of message does that send? I know we diverting it a little bit, but when we're looking at it, I think this is the frustrating part. Is if that is the truth, Sean, what message does that send?
What do you mean in terms of like she? I suppose when I view it like that, in that sort of situation where like Pinty's causing cuck like that, I view it like a workplace, like what you have to do there. You might not agree. You're definitely gonna have clashes with your colleagues. You're not gonna agree with everyone. You're gonna have different personalities. You can't always voice your opinion. Sometimes the better option is to just sort of get to a working relationship with the person. How you handle that's different, but I don't think always calling out everything that someone does wrong in that in the way that she did it is always right. So, like in my mind, when I was looking at it, I get it's life. I get that those two are never going to be friends, so you don't have to keep them friends. But in that regard, I view Survivor, like I think if I were ever to play Survivor, which I don't think I ever will, but I would view it the same as a workplace where you're not going to get along with everyone, but you somehow have to make it work. So that's how I view it. I don't know. I can obviously empathize with what Tanya was saying in terms of like she was standing up for what she thought was right and for the best of the betterment of the tribe, in terms of like, listen, you can't have one person just, you know, taking up all the fire, eating all the food and stuff like that. But I think like I said, I view it as like a game in a workplace. So if the goal is to win. So, you know, suck
fair
it
enough.
Up.
Fair enough. But yeah, here we go. Just in case anyone is worried, Tanya's saying she's coming to visit me. I'll make sure I have plenty of food for her. Here we go. Good to know. Good to know, Tanya. Also, just in case you're wondering, Sean, what is Tanya over here? What is Tanya?
Gandalf the Grey, it looks like. Okay.
Yeah, but it's Tanya the Wise, Sean. Come on, get with it. Right. On three, two, one. Yeah, Tanya the Wise. Come on. Anyway. Let's move on from that. Okay, I'm going to count down to three. I'm going to count down to 10. I'm going to give everyone 10 seconds to give their final sort of golden spear candidates there. And then when I get to 3, 2, 1, Sean and I are going to shout that loud. Let's see if we come to consensus. All right, I'm going to count down. Ready? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. Sean, you ready? 2, 1. Tevin. Ah, there we go. Okay, no, we're good. Okay, Tevin, congratulations. Okay. You win the golden spear for the first week. Good game, man. Good game. Now it's time.
Yeah,
it's time. Although Richard's saying he's still going with Dante. I think I'm telling you, Richard. Dante? He's gonna come short.
I think he played too quickly.
Time for the wooden spoon. Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready? And that was the wooden spoon, just in case you weren't sure what that was. Which players made the worst move, Sean?
In the conversation, although I don't think it would be my final award, would have to be Chappies. You're going first boot. It has to be up for consideration. I don't know how much him digging during the night cost him the vote. He always was a massive threat. So how do you, how do you change that opinion? I mean, he was the only season eight in that post-merge tribe, and he made it to final three. So he was always going to have a big target on his back. But I mean, on the first night, or I don't know, was it the first night? Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, on the first night to be digging for idols, it kind of cemented that if they lost, he might not make it through that first one.
Yeah, and it's a tricky one because personally speaking, I think I've had plenty of chats with a lot of people about Chappie's returning. Now, did I think he was the right choice to be cast? No, I did not, because this outcome is – there was a high probability of this outcome, him being the first boot out. I mean, it's easy to gang up against him. They've all just seen it's very fresh in the memory. Does it diminish his legacy in any way? No, it does not. So there's always a possibility of him coming back. But like Ricky Bobby, if you ain't first, you're last. And that's why, you know, Chappie's over there. And also first ever, he makes history yet again. First ever player to get voted out back to back two different seasons. So congrats to you there, Chappies. But yeah, I think the wooden spoon goes to him for making the choice to come back and play, personally speaking. I think it was a tough one. I mean, it's hard to turn down, but I do think it wasn't the right time for him. Any other ones?
I agree with that. No, I mean that, yeah, like I said, that was just a mention that I don't think he played that well. I still, unfortunately, I know Tanya's listening. Unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to go with her. I think in terms
don't worry,
of,
Sean, Tanya's saying the wooden spoon for her. She's in agreement.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Well, then I don't feel so bad. No, I mean, like what I mentioned earlier, taking the fall for Teresa, I couldn't really understand that thing other than her wanting to work with Teresa. I think the way she called out Pinty, she could have done it in a different way, but I think she was a bit brash about it. Greedy little pig didn't help. But
that did not help the cause at all, because that was the one argument that Pinty had, and she stuck that. That's all she could use, right? And she used it, and everyone was like, yeah. And then double standards, and so yep. I do think and I think Tanya, from that perspective, it is tricky. And what makes you so lovable when you watch it? And again, it's too. I don't know if anyone follows her on Facebook or anything, but there's a reason people like you, and there's a reason people like appreciate her, is because what you're seeing on their TV is 100% her. And it's very difficult, as opposed to other people, you're not sure if they're putting on a farce, they're putting it on for the cameras versus being real. And again, that's the sort of discrepancy, game versus real life. And again, there, Tanya, it was just one of the situations, like Sean says, where it was like, okay, is this work or is it the game, or what's the outcome here? And in that case, it was just too blurry because the person was such a hindrance. And at the end, Pinty got under your skin, or was it that was arguably the worst part about it all. But I think when we're looking at someone else, Sean, any other candidates from that perspective, as to, you got Chappies, we also know he went digging very soon. It wasn't a great time to go digging for that idol. But is there anyone else who'd show up?
I mean, I suppose PK has to be at least in the conversation. I mean, he got voted out second. He seemed, I mean, that's obviously the way they edited, but they start off that episode with him being the most arrogant person, just saying like he's got this thing under control and knows exactly where the votes are going, like he's in the majority, and then he gets voted out. So in that regard, I mean, I don't know, I can't really pinpoint exactly what he did wrong, other than maybe portraying or trying to control the vote too early. I don't think I'd give him the wooden spoon. I don't think he deserved that, but like, you know, he has to be in the conversation for being voted out, thinking he was so strong.
But there's something in there. There's definitely something in there. Cause when you look at it also, even the choice in the challenge where he opted for the keys versus the ropes. I mean, there's a sure thing versus the one that requires more of a chance. He went the chance route, somewhat backfired because of his confidence. And then again, him relying on a Tony to try and make something happen. I understand they've got matching tattoos, but in the situation that Marion sort of portrayed and did, everyone came in there going, oh, her and Shane are quite close. What did she do? She distanced him, kept him in arm's length, close enough to say, hey, we're still working together, but didn't put that out there, where PK was like, I'm the man calling the shots, Tony, you and I are 1-2, and immediately put the target on his back. So it wasn't a great move from his side.
No, agreed. And I mean, having mentioned that, I'd put Tony's name up for wooden spoon. Firstly, like the way she acted, I mean, even towards Marion, to start calling out her like skin condition and stuff seems a bit rough to, you know, to try to get people to vote for her. And then what I would almost call like a meltdown when PK got voted out, me seemingly like, you know, like, how's she supposed to work with those people again? Like, unless she, I mean, she even said, like, she doesn't even want the 2 million. So, I mean, come on, like, you got to be a bit more rational in that sort of thinking. I know it didn't go your way, but I mean, to start screaming at Dante, and I thought Dante caught the short end of that stick. I don't think he really shouted at her. She was shouting at him and he was trying to get his point across. I don't think it was any, like, verbal abuse or anything. I think it was just a heated argument.
Yeah, to be fair, I think when you are looking at it, it is. Oh, also, you know, we didn't mention Palesa for the Golden Spear, but I suppose she, not this week, but she is there. She's in the right sort of place. You don't want to be too out there peacocking right now. So she's in a fine balance. But going back to that duo, I think actually PK and Tony sort of made that when we're looking again at a Shane and a Marion sort of combination, they made that decision together where they were working together and was very overt to everyone else. So, yes. And I think the problem with PK going out is the rug is completely swept from under her. So now she feels completely isolated. So things do feel like the world is up against her because you're stuck with these people that you don't really like. You have to play this game. It hasn't gone your way. And now you need to try and get back in their favor. Is she getting back in their favor? Not the best way. So definitely not. So I think she's completely isolating herself by that. It's almost mirrors. There isn't an antagonist in her scenario. She is sort of like self-destructive in terms of being the antagonist there. But it does mirror what happened on Yontao in terms of the conflict between Pinty and Tanya, where it was the emotions that got the better of them. And I think at the end of the day, when you are looking at Pinty versus Tanya, the difference was that Pinty can shrug it off. Because naturally, she is the antagonist, right? So that's she's very confrontational. So when it comes to confrontation, even at the tribal council, she can make a joke out of it. She can sort of manage that because she's used to it. Where it is, it's a lot harder for someone who feels like they're not being heard. And I generally felt that even though, again, it didn't matter what sort of argument Tanya put out there, because people had already made their mind up as to going, no, Tanya is a bit more savvy, but you can't rein it in. Whereas a Pinty, at the end of the day, she is quite impulsive and is quite abrupt. But to a certain extent, you know where she stands because she's going to reveal that. Whereas, you know, to one of the comments, look, that courage thing. I love that courage thing where she called them out. That was amazing. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. Is there anyone else
you want to talk about from the Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Tanya was 100% right in everything she identified. With what Pinty was doing. Yeah, you can't take more food. You can't have the best sleeping spot. I don't think Pinty played that had a good week either. I'm just saying because of what Pinty was doing, she made herself an easy target. Like, let's just get rid of her. She's the one eating all the food. She's sleeping in the best position. She's annoying everyone. Let's get rid of her. That's why I gave it to Tanya. Tanya was 100% justified in calling her out in what she did. I'm just saying the way she went about it was wrong, and that's why I gave it to her. But, I mean, Pinty didn't have a good week either. I mean, she can't be so aggressive and abrasive with people if she wants to work with them. You can't just annoy people like that and expect them to carry on voting with you or even to keep you around for that long.
Yeah, fair. That's fair enough. One last shot, outside shot from my side. We've got to throw Shane in there. Shane coming in somewhat seeming like not starting too quickly out the gates, thinking he knew a little bit more than what he did. Obviously, the way in which Marion played him, he thought he had more out of that scenario. So that trust kind of got the better of him. And then we're also looking at one or two decisions that he makes where when he is trying to save himself and he feels highly, highly threatened at this point, he knows his name's on the chopping block. He does come out being quite again, abrupt in terms of going, this is what you should do, because he's that desperate and he's trying to convey that desperation and force someone to make the decision. And again, this is maybe that works in a sort of newbie season, but in a season where you've got players that all kind of think they know what they're doing, you can't exactly force an idea upon someone. So you kind of need to be receptive, and he wasn't. And I think that ultimately nearly got him home, or got him sent home.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think he had an outstanding week either. I think he got quite, well, it looked like anyway, quite blindsided with that vote. I mean, he was pretty sure him and Marion were solid and he was completely out of the loop. So I think he panicked a bit for the next vote, which came across, I think, a bit strong. But I think because of maybe Tony's, like outburst, it kind of got forgotten about a little bit, it seemingly. I don't know, but we'll see how it plays out.
All right. Well, I'm going to count down from 10 again in the comments. Hit us up with who you think the wooden spoon. Tanya's saying she should get it. Sean, as soon as I get to 3, 2, 1, get the wooden spoon in mind, and then we're going to say it again, and we're going to see who's going to get it, right? So 10, 9. We should probably get a counter for this because I don't know if people want to hear me count down. But anyway, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. 3. Sean, are you ready?
Yeah.
2. 1. Pinty. I just couldn't do it. Tanya, I couldn't do it. I'm sorry. I couldn't do it. Okay. So there we go. I don't know if one comment. We just need one. I know Tanya's giving it to herself, but anyone else? Oh, there we go. Jeremy's saying Tony. He's stirring it up with a wooden spoon. He likes stirring this pot there. Okay. All right. So we're a bit undecided there. We'll see what happens with regards to the coming weekend. I'm going to put a thing out on social streets and we'll see what people come up with. And then that will be determined. Although Tanya's saying they can share it. Okay. Christy's saying pinty. There we go. So, okay, so Pinty and Tanya can share it. Oh, Pinty doesn't share. That's also true. All right. So before we move on, we're going to introduce our new sort of, we're going to introduce our new segment of the show. And this is pretty much where we rate the week in terms of what we experienced and how good we thought the episodes were. So Sean, in terms of how killer these episodes were, how many skulls out of 5 would you give them? And also in the comments, tell us how good you think this was out of 5. And you got to show by skulls. So if you thought it was like a 5 out of 5, put 5 skulls in the comments. Sean, what do you think and why?
I reckon 3. Yeah, a bit of a
3 out of 5. You're a harsh guy.
Yeah.
You're so harsh, bro.
Yeah. Well, if you go any higher, there's no room for improvement. And I'm assuming the season's just going to get better and better. So, I mean, let's see how it goes. But, I'd say 3. It's a little bit of a slow start. I mean, in terms, I find it the most difficult this week, even like, trying to find a golden spear. So, I mean, I don't think it was the best week of Survivor I've ever watched. So, I mean, 3, but, if I give them 5 now, then what are we going to do next week? So, I mean.
Look, you got Christy saying 3, Tanya saying 5. I mean, to be honest, I am worried. I'm worried. How good would it really get without Tanya being on the show? That's the one thing I'm worried about. Okay. But we've got Alex also saying 3. We've got Richard coming in, Kamohelo coming in with 3. Jeepers, you guys are all in the same wavelength here. I was going to give it a 4. Yeah. Warren also saying 3.
4.
What did I miss? Look, guys, when I'm going back at it, yes, first episode, this is experimental. 4 episodes a week, I understand. It's a lot. But the first one was very slow. People weren't too happy. I get it. But then all of a sudden, the second one, it's a one vote difference. It was tight. The Giants, the favorites lost. Sort of an underdog story. Then again, back to back, the same thing happens. One vote difference. The Chappies went home. The guy that was a favorite, arguably, for this season. Not in my book. But, I mean, in the books of other people's in the community. And then, what am I trying to justify? Everyone's saying 3, right? I'm going to agree with everyone. Tanya, I would give it a 4, but everyone's giving it a 3. So here we're ready. So the weekly rating we're going to show everyone is officially 3 skulls. There we go. 3 skulls. 3 out of 5.
There we go.
Then we're going to move over. Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time for Storms Brewing. And that is where we make the predictions of what we think is to come. So wait for this. Also, again, Tanya, you're getting a lot of shout-outs here. You were inspiration behind this, and you'll know why. Are you guys ready for this? Are you ready? Storms brewing, ladies and gentlemen. And this is why, Tanya. This is why. That was the inspiration behind that animation. Warren, good job. You absolutely killed it. For those of you who are wondering, this is the authentic water bottle, Tanya's water bottle on this series, and this is what she had. Thank you very much. I really appreciate this. And that's what inspired that. So Storms Brewing, Sean, what do you think is going to come? What do we have in store for us?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously, we've got another 4 episodes, but I think in terms of who we previously mentioned, I think it's going to be a tough week for Tony and Pinty, both for Pinty for annoying the tribe. I don't know if they'll keep her around much longer. I know Tanya put herself on the chopping block that time. So she got the vote, but I mean, she seems like the clear one to go next if they lose another like challenge. And then on the other tribe, Masu, I reckon Tony's in a world of trouble there, with her isolating herself, having that little breakdown or outburst, whatever you want to call it. So I think those two are on the chopping block, although in that little snippet or what's coming next, it did seem like they might be gunning for Dante. So
that's the one point. I think you've wrapped it up, Sean. I think that's good. We know obviously precarious situations for Tony and Plante. It would be interesting to see if they can get out of it. Doubt it very much. But obviously Dante being called the Godfather. Yo. What are they? The full package. What do they call themselves? The full package are going to come for him.
Full package.
They're going to unwrap his package. maybe that is for his speedo. Tato, where have you been, sir? You are so late. You're not making notes this time around. You come in here. Also, Tanya, Tato was a Tanya fan. Very sad. Look, he's crying. I mean, come on, Tato. Where have you been? You've been hiding. But yes, when we look at the storms bring, you've called them out. Very fearful for Dante. And obviously, not so much for Tony and Pinty, because it's kind of what we're seeing. Any sort of upsets in terms of what we're seeing, power dynamic, any sort of shuffles that could potentially happen? We've seen sort of Felix and Phil kind of, you know, doing something there, potentially waiting to make the right move on a Tevin or a Sheamus.
Yeah, they mentioned it. Whether they keep to that tribal unity that they keep pushing, we'll have to see. I don't know. I think they're a little bit more tentative, being the pre-merge tribe, whether to vote out Sheamus, who is not causing any cuck at the moment, and he's also quite a challenge asset. He's not going to like be a hindrance in the challenges. So I don't know if they would make that move. And I would say if they did, I'd think it might be a bit too early. Carry on winning for the moment. Well, I know they lost a lot, but you know, continue with the keeping the tribe strong. Yeah, like I said, maybe Dante would be the upset. I don't know if they would make a big move. Do you reckon they're going to vote Sheamus, or were they speaking about Tevin or not really?
No. I think, my overall feeling, the one point I'm worried about, or curious about rather, not worried, this is definitely the wrong word, is when we're looking at Kalani and we're looking at Tejan. So two of the older players that have come, or from the older seasons rather, that have come into the situation, both getting purple edits at this moment in time. We haven't seen much of them. Tejan looking like he's a bit clueless. We're hoping that's more intentional than it is not being clueless, but that's the sort of feeling we're getting. And obviously we saw a little bit of Kalani, but that wasn't the most flattering light, where she was speaking about Tanya at the water well and then getting caught out for it. So those are sort of, I wonder what's going to happen there. But as time being, like, as what it seems like is they are extra numbers in the large scheme of things. We've got sort of the power happening in the Masu tribe with the gods of the three ladies. And then we've got the power arguably with the Sheamus and Tevin and a Sheamus. And Dino's there on the periphery. We haven't seen much of him apart from burning his hands, which we could argue was a Pinty move as well, because there wasn't enough space by the fire, which
Dino would have voted out just for hogging all the space of the thing.
Yeah. But anyway, we're getting distracted. So I wonder, we got to Tato saying, no, Sheamus is safe. That's what Tato's saying. And he expects more from Tejan. Okay. All right. Sean?
Yeah, difficult to comment on Tejan. Yeah, we haven't really seen much from him, and I agree with you, and Kalani as well.
All right, but we're hoping for a good week. We're obviously, like Sean and everyone else said, 3 out of 5, hoping for it to improve. Like I said, we can't start on too much of a high, so maybe I should take my own advice. Final thoughts there, Sean, before we head out?
No, nothing much from me. I basically said everything I was sort of thinking of. It was a good start. It's getting used to watching all four episodes in a week. It's quite a lot of Survivor, but it's going to be good.
Look, it is true. I was saying, like, you can get away with it with other shows because you don't have to pay attention. With Survivor, you don't pay attention. Next thing you see, Chappie's out, Tanya's out, and you go, what just happened? I mean, it happened to me last night. We were out and about, and then Tanya got voted. I completely missed it. And when you told me, I was devastated. I was like, what? And I still asked the people I was with. I was like, how did this happen? Anyway, point is, ladies and gentlemen, Sean made his TNO debut. This is the first time he's ever done a sort of podcast, vlogcast ever. So you can also give him a skull rating out of 5 if you feel like. I mean, he needs to know the truth, I think.
I don't. People are positive. I'm happy to be happy to live in bliss, ignorance.
Kerry asking, I wonder how Dino will come back from his burn injuries. That's a good point.
That's actually interesting.
What do they say about, like, when a jellyfish stings you or something stings you? Maybe, you know.
What do you reckon? He's going to piss on himself or something?
Well, I'm saying maybe that, I mean, could that help with burns? I don't know if we've got a nurse in the house, but potentially.
I mean, I'm not a doctor.
Neither am I. Okay. So, Sean, thank you very much. For everyone who joined us, we really appreciate you. We love you. We're looking forward to seeing you next week. Tanya, thank you so much for jumping on. Hopefully somewhere down the line we can get you on and actually do a proper sort of conversation with you. It is a bit tight right now with everyone, and we need to do everything that we need to do from our side. But we love you, we appreciate you, and we're enjoying this season so far. We look forward to next week. Sean.
Yeah, lekker. Hope to see everyone next week again.
All right. Everybody, thank you for joining us. If you don't know what to be, Sean, the saying is be cool. So if you don't know what to be.
Oh, be cool. Is it?
There we go. Cheers, everyone.